This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When Catherine Switzer towed the start line at the 1967 Boston Marathon, she was not out to make a political statement. The 20-year-old runner just wanted to see if she could make the 26.2-mile distance required to call herself a marathoner. But just a few miles in, she became an icon in running history. Catherine was jeered by members of the press and attacked by the race director, who did not want a female entrant in that race. She sprinted from his physical assault, finished the marathon, and became a champion for women runners across the nation. Next spring, Catherine Switzer will be back on that start line in Boston 50 years after her historic run. Catherine Switzer joins me now from sister station WFAE in Charlotte. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you, Frank. It's wonderful to be here.
Good to talk with you. Take us back to before that marathon and when you started running, which I understand was the age of 12, right?
You know, it's amazing. I'm actually in North Carolina, in Raleigh, and in Charlotte to celebrate the anniversaries of Girls on the Run. And this is a wonderful program that gets young girls together and using the vehicle of running, empowers them to form a wonderful non-judgmental community and be empowered for the rest of their lives. And it's near and dear to me just because of that, Frank, because you said I started running at 12, and it was something that changed my life. My dad saw in his daughter, a skinny little kid going off from elementary school right into high school. And in being insecure, he said, you know, you ought to play on that field hockey team in your high school. And I said, oh, I couldn't do that, Dad. You know, I've never had a stick in my hand. And he said, all you have to do is run a mile a day and you'd be one of the best players. He was very, very positive. And I began this mile a day in the hopes of making the field hockey team. I struggled through it. I did it. And I did make the team. But the point is, as I had a victory under my belt every day, nobody could take away from me. And how incredible that was as a kid going into high school and then all through my life. The run a day has been the thing that is really given me my magic.
I wonder if you felt about that. I mean, obviously, you're using running to train at first. You're not really, you know, into it immediately. Did you begin to actually love running pretty early on, or did that come later?
Well, certainly every day was different. Some days were utterly impossible. It was in Washington, D.C., where it was very sticky and hot. You know about that down here. And other days were bliss. So it was a good life lesson. But it wasn't until I really got into distance running, which occurred at Syracuse University, that I really began falling in love with the running itself, long miles.
Well, and at Syracuse, you were running with the men's cross-country team, right?
Yes, can you imagine? I go to this big powerhouse university to study journalism because I wanted to be a sports writer because I knew that there weren't going to be any sports for me after college. And when I got to Syracuse, there were no sports for women at all. They had play days, but men had scholarships in about 20 different sports, about 30 deep. So I thought, what's wrong with the picture? So I went and asked the track coach if I could train with the team. He said I could train with them, but not run officially, that was against NCAA rules. And it was there that I met a volunteer coach who had been an ex-marathoner, and he felt sorry for me because I was so slow and ran with me every day slowly, and we built up our miles, and he regaled me with stories about this amazing event called the Boston Marathon.
Wow. So tell us about that. When did you first decide? Yeah, did you know that there had been no official female entrant in the Boston Marathon when you heard about it?
No. In fact, I knew in history there had been about six women who had run a marathon and done the distance. And I loved great women who did amazing things with distance, like Sacagawea, you know, who led the Lewis and Clark expedition and all the way across the country. So I knew women could do endurance, and I knew I could do endurance. I couldn't go fast. And a woman actually had run the Boston Marathon the year before by jumping out of the bushes and running it. And so I knew women had done it, so I didn't think there was any big deal. My coach was the one, when I proved to him in practice that I could cover the distance, he was so proud of me, he helped me sign up for Boston and said, you have to sign up. This is a serious race. And I said, well, can't I just go and jump in? And he said, no. You don't do that with the Boston Marathon.
That's interesting because if I have the story right, that coach thought, okay, I'm going to work with you on this, but I don't think women can actually run a marathon initially.
Yeah, when we were training, we were running a blizzard in Syracuse. Syracuse, New York, and at night, and we were doing 10 miles. It was crazy. And he was telling me about Boston, and I said, well, why are we talking about it? Let's just run it. And he said, a woman can't possibly do the distance. And I said, what are you, crazy? I'm doing 10 miles in a blizzard. And he said, no, you know, 10 miles is not 26, and women are too weak and too fragile. And I got angry. And he finally said, well, if you prove it to me, I'll believe you. And one day we went out and ran 26 miles. And in fact, we ran 31 because I didn't believe that we had run far enough. He passed out at the end of the workout. And when he came to, he said, women have hidden potential in endurance and stamina. So we'd really discovered something. Yeah. You know, really, I mean, he thought we were sailing on a flat earth. And I mean, I felt like Magellan.
Fascinating stuff. But again, tell me now why you didn't want to be a fish. So now you've done this thing. You actually outran the coach. You're waiting for him to come to at the end of 30 some odd miles. You've done it, but you don't want to officially enter the Boston Marathon. Why not?
No, I didn't know it was important. I mean, I just thought this Boston Marathon thing was this great big open race. You know, I was a registered runner and had run in track races and AAU races, and I knew how to sign up, and I was a card-carrying member of the Federation. But I didn't know Boston was that big a deal. I thought it was kind of this, you know, love-in run, right? And he said, no, that's very, very strict, and you have to follow the rules. And so I said, what, are there rules against a girl running? And he said, no, look at the rule book, and there weren't. And we looked at the entry form, and there's nothing about gender. And I thought, it's interesting. I said, gee, I'm going to be noticed when I go up in Boston. And he said, I know, and I'm proud of you. Oh. It was really, really very sweet, very sweet. He was a guy who completely flipped from one side to the other, but not believing in women's capability to totally believing in them.
You did officially enter, and actually there's some controversy over how you wrote your name on that entry form, right?
It's another story. Back when I was 12 and running, started running, I was also reading J.D. Salinger, and I was also writing for my high school newspaper. And so I began signing my name K.V. Switzer. Right, I thought initials were cool. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, it was because my dad had misspelled my name on my birth certificate. He left the E out of the Catherine, and it was always misspelled with people trying to spell it correctly. And I got tired of that, and I just started signing my name K.V. Switzer. So by the time I was 19, 20, and entering the Boston Marathon, I didn't even think twice about it. I just signed the entry form K.V. Switzer. And so, of course, officials thought that the K was Kurt Carrier Kim, but not Catherine.
There you go. And I guess some people have said, oh, you tried to sneak in. You didn't want people to know you're a man. But
of course. Yeah. Of course. And people said I tried to disguise myself at the start, you know, with wearing a bulky sweatsuit. Well, let me tell you, it's 34 degrees with sleet and snow and a headwind. We had on everything we owned. Everybody looked alike. Underneath that, I had on a really cute shorts and top. You know, I wanted to look feminine. And and in fact, maybe that was a good thing, because if I were in shorts and a top and had been in a warm day, probably that angry official would have pulled me off at the start line and not 2 miles into the race.
Well, let's hear more about that story. In fact, take us back the 2 miles and talk about the start of that race. What set the scene for us?
Oh, it was, first of all, very, very cold, very, very snowy, sleety, people utterly miserable, the officials in disarray trying to get everybody into the starting area. But when I walked into the starting area with my teammates and my coach, everybody started patting me on the back and saying, hey, we're glad a woman is here. I wish my wife would run. I wish my girlfriend would run. I got to tell you, male runners are really wonderful, and they've always, always encouraged me. It was phenomenal, and that was the same. And Arnie, my coach, turned to me and said, see, I told you everybody would love you here. It's great. No problem. And when the gun went off, people went by me and said, you know, we're with you all the way. Go for it. And I was so excited because it was like going to Mecca. You know, you've been praying all year, and now you finally get to go to church. And and I'd been training really hard, and here I was in the greatest race in the world. And you feel wonderful always at the start of a marathon. You know it's going to hurt later, but at the beginning, it's very festive.
Well, you were singing with the choir for about 2 miles, and then all of a sudden the tune changed. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and so here I was, and the press truck came from behind us. It was a very badly organized race with the press truck starting behind us, and when they came through and beeped their horn and made us go over, the photographers were sitting on the flatbed truck backwards so that they could shoot the race, and so the cameras are going along in front of us, and when they saw me, a girl, in the race, they started shouting, "It's a girl! It's a girl! It's a girl! Take her picture!" And the official was on the bus alongside of the press truck, and apparently the scribes, the writing journalists, and the officials began teasing this race director, who was a feisty guy, got to tell you. His name was Jock Semple. He was a very feisty Scotsman. They were teasing him, saying, there's a girl in your race, and she's wearing numbers. And he really just completely lost his temper, and he jumped off the bus while it was still running and went after me. And I didn't see him because he was behind me, but I could hear his leather shoes scraping. You often hear, as a runner, a dog behind you before you see the dog, before it barks. Or bites you,
yeah,
because you hear its claws on the pavement. And it was the same instinctive fear of a different sound. And I quickly turned, and there's the fiercest face of any guy I'd ever seen, grabbed me and screamed, get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers, and tried to manhandle me backwards and tried to pull off my bib. And I tried to get away from him, and my coach was screaming and yelling, get away, leave her alone, leave her alone. And he said, you stay out of this. And he smacked my coach and went back after me and had me by the shirt. But then my boyfriend, who was running with me, who was only in the Boston Marathon because if a girl could run it, he could run it. He happened to be an ex-All-American football player, weighed 235 pounds, and came across like a streak and took the official out with one of the cleanest shoulder charges you'd have ever seen. And the I know, it's funny in the retelling. The official flies through the air, and my coach says, run like hell, and down the street we went. And this is all captured in front of the press truck.
Yeah.
But, you know, Frank, you know, we're laughing at it because it sounds funny. But if you can imagine, here I am, a 20-year-old girl running her first major race and had trained hard for it. And suddenly I was terrified, scared, and exceptionally humiliated because I was made to feel so unwelcome.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you, I mean, in that moment, I mean, again, this is really terrifying. It's only funny in the aftermath and knowing that you succeeded so wildly and all that you've done for women in athletics since. But in that moment, did you decide to, I mean, was there a half a moment when you thought, I got to stop? I can't go on?
There's always that split second when you feel so unwelcome. And hated by everybody. I mean, the press were yelling and screaming you want to step away and not wreck. Apparently, I'm wrecking a really great race. Okay. And then I said, I can't do that. If I do that, people are saying I'm quitting. And it's going to set women's sports back because they're going to say, see, she quit. She's a quitter. Girls can't do it. Women don't belong. You know, she's not good enough. She's just a prankster or a clown. And that's when I turned to my coach and I said, I'm going to finish this race on my hands and my knees if I have to. Because if I don't finish this race, nobody's going to believe women can do it. Nobody's going to believe we belong here. I'm going to finish this race no matter what. And he said, okay. But here's the point. How did a 20-year-old girl have the presence of mind with the world press, you know, leaning down on her like that, make a decision to go ahead and finish no matter what? I had 24 miles to go. Into a sleeting headwind, all right? And the reason is because I started to run when I was 12. And every day I felt victorious and strong. Again, that's another reason why I'm supporting Girls on the Run so much, because I want those girls to grow up feeling fearless like I did and have the courage to make a tough decision. I went on and finished the race. Sometime about 20, 22 miles, I stopped being angry at the official. I'd murdered him every way you could murder somebody. But by that time, I realized, you know what? He's just a product of his time. Yeah. He's a tired race director. And what we need to do is to create opportunities for girls and women to participate in sports and in run so that they, too, are unafraid to come out and take part. And that will change the world. It'll change everything.
Well, it's interesting.
It did.
It did, but not immediately, because even after the race, you did finish on your own 2 feet, and still the press was not kind, right?
They weren't. One journalist was very nice, and he wrote a great article, and he turned out to later be the dean of the Boston Marathon. He was a wonderful journalist named Joe Kincannon. He actually wasn't much older than I was. It was his first big writing assignment. I'm sure the editor said, why don't you go out and cover the girl, you know? And he wrote a great piece. But everybody else wrote pretty much hateful things. Bud Collins also wrote a very good column. But rest his soul. He's a wonderful writer. But I don't forget now. I had the support of all the guys in the race. Right. The guys loved it. Men runners loved it. Race directors invited me to their races. They wanted publicity. And I just wanted to use these things as vehicles to show other women that they could run. And every time I ran, women would write to me and call me and say, if you go there, I'll come with you. You know, I'm afraid to go by myself, but if you come, I'll come.
Yeah. Yeah, but the racing world didn't change. Forgive me, because the AAU made a ruling based on your entry, right?
They did. They said, you know, women weren't allowed in the Boston Marathon the next years. That was a men's only event. But women do what women do best. We got together and we changed the legislation. And we showed that we were serious and that we had performances. It took 5 years, Frank, but then it was Boston that had to admit us first. And they women were made official in the Boston Marathon in 1972. Eight of us could do the required time because Jock Semple said, if you're going to run in my race, you have to run the men's qualifying time. We could do it. We did it. And then all of a sudden he said, well, why? Wow, they ran really well.
Maybe.
And then he and I became good friends.
That's a good story.
Isn't that amazing?
And it is. And you're going to run it again 50 years after that initial race.
You know, just real quickly in between there, when we got official at Boston, then that opened one floodgate for me, which allowed me to go and create with great sponsorship. I created 400 races in 27 countries, used the data and statistics from those races to get the International Olympic Committee to admit the women's marathon into the Olympic Games, and now started my own foundation of empowerment called 261 Fearless, reaching women around the world through the vehicle of running. And yes, 50 years on, how blessed I am to actually be able to run. And running has been my hub of my life. It's really given me just about everything. And I said, you know, 50 years on, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon again. I've run Boston 8 times. Since then, I've done the broadcast of the race 38 consecutive years, if you can imagine. And I said to my news director, I said, you know what? Sorry, I'm running it next year. And he said, you got to be kidding me. He couldn't believe it. And it's going to be great. We're going to have about 100 women with me, a flotilla called 261 Fearless Women, the 261 Fearless team. We're going to be out there on the start line. It's not going to be fast, but it's going to be the weekend of our lives.
How are you feeling about it? You know, physically?
I feel great. I'm in good shape. The training is going well. And what an honor to we all only have one 50th anniversary in our lives, and this is a big one for all of us women. It's the moment that changed everything.
261, the big number, and of course that was the number you wore in that first marathon, and that's why. Tell us more about that foundation. You're in North Carolina to speak for Girls on the Run. Tell us more about what you do.
Well, 261 Fearless is very much like Girls on the Run for grown-up women. It's using the empowerment message that running gives us. Running is very transformational for everybody, but for women, it's exceptional. Whether it's the endorphins or other chemicals, whatever it is the wonderful sense of empowerment that we can control a very hectic, busy life, make difficult decisions, bust stress, be creative. But 261 Fearless is a global event movement and a global organization of clubs, training, events, merchandising, but mostly communication right now around the world. We're only a year old. We're going really well. We have clubs in a lot of different countries. And a lot of these women are going to be joining me on the start line at Boston, raising money for the foundation, which is absolutely great. I have to thank the Boston Athletic Association, who were not too nice to me for 5 years, who have come through with a number of charity bibs so these women can apply to run with me and raise money for the foundation that is going to continue to change girls and women's lives around the world. Most of the women, Frank, in the world live in a fearful situation. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. And if we can reach them through something that is cheap, easy, and accessible, like running, and communicating to them so that they know they're not alone out there, it's going to make a huge difference. Running's done it before. It'll do it again. I mean, you look at Kenya and Ethiopia, where women had absolutely nothing. And when they went out and began running, they took their prize money back to their villages. They're building schools, sanitizing water, inoculating kids. They're changing the social fabric. So it's not just about running. It's about changing our lives.
All right, Catherine, what a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you, Frank.
Catherine Switzer speaks tomorrow night at the Girls on the Run of Triangle event in Cary. We've got details at our website at stateofthings.org. You can find out about all of her visits and her appearances at that same website. And we thank her and our sister station WFAE in Charlotte, where she was speaking to us. From Catherine is Catherine Switzer. Find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll hear classical music featuring an unlikely instrument from members of the Mallarmé Chamber Players and the UNC Chapel Hill Music Department. That's coming up on the State of Things. Stay tuned.